Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Kuf Chav Vav Amud Aleph, 8 lines down. The Gemara now is challenging the conclusion that Tobiah drew yesterday with regards to Rabbi Yossi's position, which is that Rabbi Yossi, Tuma Tmuna, Eno Bokat. That when it comes to Tuma, that is subsumed, encompassed inside of something, that it doesn't burst out, it doesn't break out from there. We saw that there are views that that is the case. And then Abaye, based on the proof from the Tosefta and from the Mishnayot, tried to show that Rabbi Yossi's position is Tuma Tmuna Eino Bokat. And that the Gemara says, V'rami de Rabbi Yossi ad Rabbi Yossi. We proved that from the Mishnah in Olot, Perek Dal Mishnah Bet. Now we're bringing another Mishnah in Olot, Perek Yud Aleph, Mishnah Zayin, which seems to offer a different view with regards to Rabbi Yossi's position. And that is Ditnan. Hakelev Shachal Basar Meit. A dog that consumed the flesh of an person who had passed away. So that is Kazayit Basar Min HaMeit, which generally would be Mitamei Be'ohel. But it's inside of the dog. And we learned earlier in the Masechta that Tum'a Blu'a, whenever you have Tum'a that is inside of a live entity, then the Tum'a has no impact on that which is outside of it. And the same thing vice versa. Things that are inside of the animal are not affected by the Tuma on the outside. Rashi seems to indicate that we view the Tuma as if it doesn't exist, meaning it's in the digestive system. So it's as if it doesn't exist or it's not there. Where others suggest that the reason there's no problem over here is because we see it as being batel to the goof of the animal. So that in the context of the body of the animal, which is not Mikabel Tuma, this is irrelevant, insignificant, and therefore it doesn't have its own standing independent of the animal. And so that's why there's no Tuma in this case. But Umeita Keller, then the dog dies. As long as the dog is alive, it can prevent the Tuma from coming out, it can prevent the Tuma from coming in. But after it dies, then the dog no longer provides this Tuma, Tmlu'a, inside of it. And now you have exposure that the Tuma can affect the house. But Umutal Aladiskopa, but the dog is lying there dead on the threshold of the house. So he's half in the house, half out of the house. Rabbi Meir Omer, Im yesh bitzavaro poteach tefach, if he has enough of a width in his neck, a poteach tefach, meviyata tuma, then he brings the tuma into the house. So the tumata mate, the gezayit min hamate, is found inside of the dog, and the dog is lying in such a manner that the rear of the dog is outside the house, and the head of the dog, the mouth of the dog, is towards the internal side of the house. Now the tuma is found in the belly of the dog, and the tuma technically shouldn't be going anywhere, because it's in an area that's not an ohel. So Rabbi Meir says, the dog itself can be classified as an ohel, as long as the neck has a poteach tefach in it. And if it has a poteach tefach in it, it can act as a funnel or a conduit through which the tuma can come into the house. Because there's now something above it. There's a roof above this tuma, which is the upper side of the dog. And then the tuma that is inside of there will be carried through that ohel into the house through the neck of the animal, which is inside of the house. Now, how do you determine that it has a poteach tefach bitzavara? So the Rosh Mishans in his Perush in Olot says that you just measure the circumference, knowing that there's a relationship of pi between the circumference of the neck and the diameter of the neck. Then if you take a measurement of the circumference of the neck and it comes out to 3.14, then that would indicate that there is a diameter of a tefach in there. The Rosh says that that's not enough because we know in order to be an ohel, you need a tefach al tefach birom tefach. You need a tefach cubed. You would need a bigger space. So he says you need a circumference of 4 1/5 in order for that to be big enough to incorporate within it a cubed 1 tefach. However you get to the measurement, what Rabbi Meir is saying is that if you have the sufficient room within this neck for it to enter into the house, then it will bring it in derech ohel. The Balei Tosafot say that we look at the neck, even though the neck itself has parts in it, including bones, skin, and all different things that are there. Nevertheless, we invoke Rabbi Meir's principle, which we've seen in other places, which is kolkakim lashlim. That when you have an empty space, then even if there is filled in space around it, we dig it out, we carve it out, and make it as if it doesn't exist to get you to the minimum shiur. Rabbi Meir says this with regards to mezuzah and the door frame size that you need for mezuzah. And similarly over here, in order to get to that threshold of a tefach, even though the neck itself is not empty and hollow, nevertheless, Rabbi Meir will look at it as if it is hollow. And therefore, the upper part of the body of the dog will serve as an ohel to bring the tumah into the house. Because, of course, the body itself has the requisite amount you need. The problem is, as you narrow towards the head, does that have the requisite amount? And then Rabbi Meir says, if you test it and it has that requisite amount, then the tumah is carried underneath the ohel of the dog. The ohel of the dog terminates inside of the house, and that'll bring the tumah into the house, and then the tumah will continue to spread in the house, because now you have an ohel that brings the tumah into the house, that allows the tumah then to get into the house, and then the house is an ohel on that ohel of the dog's head that's inside of the house. That'll make the house tameh. If that's not the case, then it can't bring the tumah in because it's not an ohel. It's not an ohel, then the tumah remains outside the house because there's nothing to bring it from the outside to the inside. Meaning that if there's an ohel, it can carry the tumah or move the tumah into the house. If there's no ohel, then the tumah remains outside the house and the house is not tameh. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Girsa the Shittim Kubetzer has, Rabbi Yossi Omer, Roim et tumah mikneged hashkof milifnim. We look at the tumah. If it's past the lintel, then abayit tameh. Mikneged hashkof ulachutz. If it's on the outside of the lintel, abayit tohor. Then the house is tohor. So what Rabbi Yossi is saying is that the threshold of the house contains within it a door frame. The threshold goes out past the frame itself, or maybe even internally in the frame, but it's a long area. Especially in their day. So if you have a step up to go into the house, the threshold begins over there, continues all the way through the door frame and then into the house. Where along that threshold do you need to be in order for it to be considered tameh or not tameh? So Rabbi Yossi says that we don't look at ohel, we don't look at anything else, we just look at that line, the dividing line, and the dividing line on the scope on the threshold is determined by the lintel. The lintel is the top of the door frame. And as Rashi explains over here, not only are we just speaking about the top of the door frame, we're speaking about what's called the jamb or the slam of the door, which is that little piece that hangs down that when you close the door, that's what bangs into. That is the point at which it determines what's inside and what's outside, meaning that the door frame itself is wide. Within the door frame itself, how do you know what's in and what's out? So that's determined by this slam. Wherever the door hits, that piece where it hits, that's the line that divides. And he says, if you're outside of that line, the tumah is outside the house. You're inside of that line, then the tumah is inside the house. What it sounds like from this is anywhere where the tumah is inside of the dog, that's where it determines whether it's in or out of the house. And you just look, you draw a line down from the jamb, and then you say, if the tumah is outside that, house is tohar. Tumah is inside of that line, house is tameh. The assumption being, and this is why it's a stira in Rabbi Yossi's position, is that Rabbi Yossi here believes that this is tumat munah, that this is tumah that is buried in something, it's not in an ohel, and therefore it's bokat vola, then it bursts out and goes upwards. Well, if it bursts out and goes upwards, then there's no ohel to speak of over here. The only thing you need to know is it inside the house, or is it outside the house? And if it's bokat, it bursts out of the dog, then if it's inside the house, it's going to be covered then by the roof of the house, and that's going to bring the tumah inside. If it's outside the house, then there's no tumah inside the house. There's nothing to discuss over here. That would seemingly go against Rabbi Yossi's position that we determined from the other Mishnah in yesterday's daf, where we said that he holds that tumah tmunah eino bokat. And that's the stira that we're speaking about here. Now we have to finish up the rest of the positions that are in the Mishnah. Rabbi Elazar Omer, piv lifnim habayit tohor. If his mouth is on the inside, then the house is tohor. The assumption here, as Rashi seems to indicate over here, which is his mouth is inside and the rear of the animal is outside the house, as well as the tumah is outside of the house. So both the tumah and the rear of the animal are outside the house. The mouth of the animal is inside the house. He says that the bayit is tahor. That goes against what Rabbi Meir said in the beginning. Pibla chutz. Then if it's the reverse scenario where the dog's mouth is on the outside of the house, then because the natural exit, egress for this kezayit minamet is through the rear of the animal. It's going to defecate, and therefore it's going to remove the tumah that way. But like we said in the Mishnah yesterday, that when its derech is to go out that way, or it needs to exit, needing to exit, or the normal way that it would have exited, is something that creates tumah. And therefore, since the dog had been alive, the tumah tamei would have gone out of the rear of the dog. We view the exit through the anus of the dog as being something that, even though it doesn't meet the requisite shiurim, it's considered to be a super tunnel that brings the tumah into the house. So now, the determining factor, according to Rabbi Lozer, is where the rear of the animal is. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteiro Omer, ben kach ben kach habayit tamei. Doesn't matter which way the dog is facing, it makes the bayit tamei, because we assume that the dog will cause the zayit min hamei to exit in one of two ways. If the dog was alive, it would either disgorge, it would throw up the zayit min hamei through the mouth, or it would defecate and have it go out the anus. So the zayit min hamei could exit in one of those two ways, and then he has a quote-unquote a super tunnel that can go out the back or the front of the animal, and therefore it doesn't matter which side of the animal is in or out, it carries the tumah, because that is a viable exit from the animal, and therefore it makes the house tameh, whether the mouth is on the inside, or whether the rear of the animal is on the inside of the house. So my love, so now the Gemara says, when Rabbi Yossi made his statement, ein bitzavaro poteach tefach koi, Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi, when he's responding to Rabbi Meir's statement, Rabbi Meir makes two statements. Rabbi Meir says that if the neck is inside the house, if the neck has a poteach tefach in it, then it brings the tumah into the house. If the neck does not have a poteach tefach, it does not bring the tumah into the house. The Gemara's assumption now is that Rabbi Yossi's response to Rabbi Meir's statement is, ha'en bitzavro poteach tefach koi. On the side that Rabbi Meir says that if there isn't a sufficient amount of space in the upper side of the neck of the dog to act as an ohel, then the tumah stays on the outside. And to that, Rabbi Yossi responds and says, that's not the case. It depends where the tumah is. Is the tumah inside or outside? Is it beyond the lintel or is it outside of the lintel? But that means that even if it's inside the house, where Rabbi Meir would say that the tumah is stuck inside the dog, and since you don't have an ohel, it doesn't carry it in, Rabbi Yossi would say in that case, it is tameh, because he believes that tumat munah is bokat. And that's what the Gemara is saying here, shma minah, tumat munah bokat. Tumah that is encapsulated in something that is not sufficient to be an ohel, according to Rabbi Yossi, that causes the tumah to burst out. And therefore, even if you have less than a tefach in the animal, it just depends on where the tumah is. Amar Rava, Rava says, no. You misunderstood Rabbi Yossi's statement. Rabbi Yossi's statement is, Ro'im et kalal hatuma kitani. Not like we saw over here, that our Mishnah says, Ro'im hatuma mikineged hamashkof. Rather, Ro'im et kalal hatuma. We look at the kalal, the space that is in there. Ve'Rabbi Yossi bitarti poli. And therefore, Rabbi Yossi argues on Rabbi Meir on two points. Ve'kamarle the Rabbi Meir. And now he's responding to Rabbi Meir. He says, that which you said, that if you have a tefach worth of space in the neck, meaning that not in the hollow area of the neck, but in the neck period, as Tosafot said again, that Rabbi Meir believes, kokakim lashlim, we allow you to use areas that are filled with other materials to count towards the poteach tefach, even though they're not hollow, because he looks at this as kokakim lashlim, as if it's not there. Once you have a hollow space, we expand the hollow space to its furthest reaches. So in this case, that'll be to the top of the neck. And from the top of the neck to the ground, if there is a tefach, according to Rabbi Meir, that's sufficient. That Rabbi Yossi disagrees with, and he says, Anan batar chalala azlinan. We go after the hollow space. He does not subscribe to this kokakim lashlim concept. Rather says, you need to have hollow space that's a tefach, not just a tefach from the top of the animal down to the ground. We don't just look at what the highest point is on the animal along the neck and say, okay, if there's a tefach between here and the ground, that's not true. There's all this other material in there. You need a hollow space of a tefach to act as a ohel. So that's the first thing he argues on Rabbi Meir, which is, we don't go after the height of the neck, we go after the hollow space in the neck. Ugeda amart. And the other statement that you made, which was alai skopa kupukula, that if it's on the threshold and you made no distinction where on the threshold that the animal is found, kulo tamei, then everything is tamei, meaning anywhere along the threshold, then if the mouth is found in that area, it is tamei. I disagree with that as well. Because even on the threshold itself, it's still governed by the lintel. And anything that's from the lintel and inward is tamei. Whereas if it's from the jamb of the door outward, then it's going to be tahor. So he argues on 2 points with Rabbi Meir. But in arguing this way, we don't come to the conclusion that the simple reading of the Mishnah, which seems to indicate that Rabbi Yossi thinks that the tumah is tmuna inside of the dog. Since it's tmuna, it doesn't have a din of ohel. It doesn't have a din of ohel. It's bokat v'olah. And therefore it matters where you are or where the tumah is located vis-a-vis the lintel of the house. That would have been the simple reading of Rabbi Yossi, but that provides us with a stira in Rabbi Yossi's position from which we concluded yesterday. He believes that tumah tmuna ain't obakat. So Rava, to reconcile that, says that Rabbi Yossi's opinion over here has nothing to do with tumah tmuna. His argument on Rabbi Meir is on 2 fundamental points. The first of which is, how do you measure an ohel? Rabbi Meir says you measure an ohel by just looking at the highest point of the animal's neck. And you see, if you have a tepach there, then you have an ohel. Rabbi Yossi says that's not the way you measure an ohel. An ohel is space. It has to be empty space. And only the chlala, only the empty space, counts towards the tepach. You don't count everything that goes into the top layer of the animal and just say that it's as if it doesn't exist, as if it's all hollow. That's Rabbi Meir's view of chukim lashlim. To that, Rabbi Yossi responds, and that's why Rav over here says that his statement is, roim et halal hatuma. We look at the halal hatuma, which is telling you that the ohel or the poteach tepach that you're looking for is determined by the halal and not by the rochav, not by the width of the neck. Number 2 is, you said that if the mouth of the animal is on the threshold, then it's classified as being inside the house. To that, I also say there's a more narrow definition of what is inside and outside. You think the entire threshold is considered inside the house? I'm telling you that the threshold is divided. Part of the threshold is inside the house. Part of the threshold is outside the house. But fundamentally, he agrees with Rabbi Meir that the mechanism for moving the tumah over here is not tumah tmunah. Tumah that is buried inside of the animal, and therefore it's bokat. Rather, the mechanism of movement is ohel. The only question is, how do you measure that ohel? Rabbi Meir says you measure it by rochav, and Rabbi Yossi says you measure it by halal, by the empty space. And then, secondarily, I also argue on the point as to where the inside and outside of the house is determined. But if that's the case, this Mishnah has nothing to do with tumah tmunah, and therefore it's not a stira to that previous conclusion that Abaye came to, that Rabbi Yossi's position based on the other Mishnah in Olot was that tumah tmunah eina bukat. He, in his Mishnah, had it explicitly that Rabbi Yossi Omer, roim et halal hatuma, rather than us saying that that's what he meant when he said roim hatuma mikneged hashkof, he had it roim et halal hatuma. And that's what led Rava to say that Rabbi Yossi's dissension to Rabbi Meir is not about tumah tmunah, but rather about the measurement or how to measure the ohel, whether it's halal or rochav. Uman tana de poligale. Who is the tana that argues on Rabbi Yossi? Now, we have Rabbi Yossi's position that ohel has a din like nogeya. So Rashi claims that the Gemara here is asking about the Mishnah that we brought from Ohelot dealing with when touching a chatzi kezayit, and you're in an ohel for a chatzi kezayit, there Rabbi Yossi says they combine, and we want to know who's the dissenting opinion that says that they do not combine. The Baal Tosafot, Ramban, and others are bothered by that explanation here in the Gemara, because even Rabbi Yossi agrees with that Mishnah over there. Both according to Abaye and Rava's explanation of Rabbi Yossi doesn't always believe that an ohel is like Nigiyah. According to Abaye, it's only in an ohel that's below a tefach. And for Rava, it's only an ohel when you're on the tumah, or you're below the tumah, but hamshacha, when you bring in the tumah through a common roof, then that's not considered to be nigiyah. So what do you mean, who argues on Rabbi Yossi there? Rabbi Yossi himself agrees with that Mishnah, there is no dissension there. So they say rather, who argues on Rabbi Yossi when we made the statement? Uman tana de kori ohel nogeya, Rabbi Yossi. Gemara made the statement, who calls ohel nogeya? That's Rabbi Yossi. Making it sound like he's the one who says it, but there are others that dissent. And who are those dissenters? And that's what the Gemara says here, Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon is the one who disagrees. The Tanya, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Shalosh Tumot, Porshot Minamet. There are three Tumot that break away from the mate. Shtayim Becholachat, Ushlishit Ein Bam. Each one of those has two of the possible Tumot that they could have, but is missing the third. Now, as Rashi points out, from a body of a mate, there are many things that separate away from the mate that cause tumat mate, including a kazayit basar min mate, the shidra v'gugolet shelo chisru, a spinal column and a skull that don't missing, robots, a molt, if you have a rova kav, a bones in there, rov binyan, of all these different types of tumat that derive from the mate itself. The mishnayot and olot are replete with items that derive from the mate that cause tumat mate. So there aren't just three things that derive from the mate. But rather, what Rabbi Shimon is saying over here is there are three things that derive from the mate that are unique. And that is, generally, things that come from the mate have the same status as the mate. The mate itself is mitameh b'maga, b'masa, and b'ohel. That's the din of tumat mate. Most of the things that derive from the mate also have those three forms of tumah: maga, masa, and ohel. What Rabbi Shimon says is there are three items that move away or break away from the mate that don't have all three of those properties. Maga, Masa, and Ohel, they have two out of those three properties, but are missing one of those properties. Ve'elohein. And these are the three things. Melo, Tarvad, Rekef. That's the thing we saw before, which is you have a ladleful, a spoonful of the decomposition of the mate that's in the dirt around the mate. Ve'etzem, Kise'ora, a bone that is the size of a barley seed. Ve'golel, Ve'dofek. The Golel and Dofek, which we saw earlier in the Masechta, Rashi here, like Shita over there, says that a Golel is the Kisui HaElyon that they put on top of the mate. It is the top of the coffin. And the Dofek are the sides of the coffin. Others, using that same definition, speak about an open field burial where you dig into the field to bury the mate, and then you place stones on the side to support stones that will be placed on top of that open field burial. And then we have the view that is seemingly brought by the Baalei HaTosafot. They argue on that view in Rashi, more explicitly described by the Or Zeruah. And they say that the Golel and Dofek are the stone that closes the doorway to the cave in which the mate is found. And the Golel is the wheel that actually rolls in front of the door. And the Dofek is the stone that holds the wheel in place so that it doesn't move from in front. That seems to be the most logical of explanations. Again, Baalei HaTosafot sometimes have a slight variation of that, not exactly what that is. That's a machloket, whether that's a lachem or shmisinai. We learned it out of the psukim of Pnei HaSadeh, that those have tumah. Now, each one of these items, melo tarvad rekef, when it comes to the spoonful or the ladleful of decomposition, mitameh b'masa uba ohel, it has tumat masa, it has tumat mo'el, ve'enu mitameh b'maga. And it doesn't have tumat maga, which is exactly against what Rabbi Yossi said. Rabbi Yossi, we said yesterday, in the case of Lotavad of Rekev, said you are tameh maga, masa, and ohel, all three of the items. Rabbi Shimon has missing from his list over here, tumat maga. That makes sense because when it comes to masa, you pick up the entirety of the decomposition that is in this ladle. When you have an OL, it's mahahil on everything. When you're nogeya, you're only touching a piece of it. It's not a single entity. It's a bunch of rot or dirt that is now gathered together with the decomposition in it. That when you touch a piece of it, there's nothing that aggregates it to make you tameh. You're only touching one part of it. And so therefore he says there's no tumat maga. That was the Gemara's question on Rabbi Yossi's position. How could he think there's tumat maga? The answer of the Gemara was, it's not really maga, it is ol that is considered like tumat maga. But you see here that Rabbi Shimon disagrees and says, even given that, there is no such din, which means he thinks that ol doesn't have the classification of tumat maga. That's what we're looking for. Who argues on Rabbi Yossi and says that ol is not classified or considered like tumat maga? Here you see, it's Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says that the melo tarvad rekev has masa and ol tumah, but does not have tumat maga, ve'echan maga'o. So where did it go to? Imachat mehem. With one of the other two, meaning with the other two items that are there, they have tumat maga, as opposed to the melot tarvad rekev. Etzem kise'ora, a bone the size of a barley seed, mitameh b'masa u'b'maga, ve'enu mitameh b'ohel. it has a din of tumat masa and maga, but it does not have a din of boel. That's the exception we've spoken about many times, that a bone doesn't have tumat oel in of itself. A bone only has tumat oel if it has a certain number of bones of the mate that are there, rob binyan. Mishnayot and Olot to speak about this, but any single bone or piece of a bone has tumat maga masa, but does not have tumat oel. And that's why in the previous daf we were speaking about the kulit, about the marrow that's inside, or the kazayit basar, because that's what you need in order to have tumat oel. Absent that, there is no tumat oel, just because it's an etzem, just because it is a bone. So, beheichan oelo, where is the tumat oel? Imachad man, with one of the other items, meaning that with the other two, whether it's the melo tarvat, or the golel v'dofek. Golel v'dofek, mitabe b'maga, uba ohel. The golel v'dofek have tumat maga, and they have tumat oel. If you come into contact with them, you'll be tamei. If you're mahil on them, you'll become tamei. Ve'enu mitabe b'masa. But it does not have tumat masa. If you carry it, then you will not have the din of tumat. Ve'eichan masa'o. Where is the tumat masa? Imachat mehem, with one of the other two, the melo tarvat rekev, or the etzim kisora, they have tumat masa. Now Rashi over here explains that when it comes to the etzim kisora, then we say halacha the Moshe Mitzrayim. There is a mitzvah halacha the Moshe Mitzrayim that magal masa itle velo ohel. That's the halacha the Moshe Mitzrayim that we learn out in the Gemara in Nazir. Tosfot says about Rashi's statement that that's the source for it. It says vei afshar lamarke. You cannot say that. We learn it out of Sukkim. And it's not halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai. The only part that's halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai is that a nazir is megaleach. That a nazir becomes tamei mate through the etzem kisora, it undermines his nazirut, even though it's not mitamei b'ohel. That's the halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai. But absent that, the Gemara has Sukkim over there, would tell us that an etzem kisora is tumat magav masa and not ohel. So Tosafot says it derives from the Sukkim. Rashi says it derives from the halacha, the Moshe Mitzrayim. The golel and dofek, the fact that they are mitamei, be'ol and maga, not masa, Rashi once again says, halacha gemirala. It's halacha the Moshe Mitzrayim. But then he says, we had earlier in the Masechta, back on Daf Ayin Bet, that that's a machloket, whether it's halacha the Moshe Mitzrayim, or it comes out of the psukim. Ulamad nafila hata mikra, the one who learns it out of a pasuk over there, lo yadana mehechayimait masa. I don't know what he does. If you learn out of halacha the Moshe Mitzrayim, then there doesn't have to conform to any logic or any sourcing. The halacha the Moshe Mitzrayim is that the golel and dofek are mitamei, be'ohel, and be'maga, not masa. That's the rule. So that's the halacha the Moshe Mitzrayim. But if you learn it out of psukim, what would possess you to bifurcate the din between maga, ohel, versus masa, on the other hand? So Tosafot disagrees, and he says, even though Rashi says, I don't know where it's from, it says, v'nire da'ukra, the pasuk that's the source for golel dofek, according to the one who says it's out of, we learn it from the Torah, and not halacha l'moshe mi-Sinai, is from the pasuk that says, v'chol asher yiga al pnei asadeh, anything that you touch on the face of the field. In the Gemara Nazir, that's also the source for tumat ohel. So therefore you see that golel dofek have a din of tumat ohel. And the fact that it expresses it as v'chol asher yiga al pnei asadeh, teaches you that there is a din of tumat maga. So from that, you learn out maga and ohel. Masa is absent from the pasuk, and therefore, you don't have tumat masa by golel dofek. Because golel dofek are a chidush, and therefore you can only have what's mentioned in the chidush. The chidush comes from al pnei asadeh. In al pnei asadeh, you have asher yiga, which is the pashtura pasuk. And in nazir, they darsh in al pnei asadeh to teach you about tumat ohel. So therefore, that's all you have by golel dofek is ohel and maga. Masa is not found there, and therefore there's no tumat masa. So Tosafot finds a way to explain, according to one who learns it from Sukkim, as to why the goal and the fake are limited in their tumah to maga and ohel. All right, now the Gemara continues. Kulit nevela v'kulit tesheretz. It's the latter part of the Mishnah that the bone, the nevela, or the bone of the sheretz, they have a din in tumah. And we established that it was because there was a kazayit worth of moach inside of these bones, according to everyone, all the different explanations. There was a kazayit in there. That kazayit of moach is what makes them tmeim. But that was dependent on whether there was a hole in it or whether there wasn't a hole in it. Absent the hole, then all the tumah that's inside remains inside and it's not tmei anything. If there's a hole in it, then tumah is able to come out of there. The hole has to be a hair's breadth. As long as that hole is there, then there is tumat maga. And now the Gemara wants to understand what's the source for this. Tanrabanan, bin nivlata. That anybody who comes to contact with the nivlata, the nivela, then they are tzmeim. Velo bikulit stuma. You have to come into contact with the nivela itself, and not with the bone that is sealed. Yachola filu nikva. You would think that even if there is a hole in the bone, that would be true. Tamalomar hanogeya yitma. That whoever comes into contact with it will be tamei. Rashi claims it's from the extra yud in yitma that causes the drusha over here. Instead of saying hanogeya is tamei, it says hanogeya yitma. And therefore, how do we reconcile between these two statements or limudim from the pasuk? Etshef shar liga. Anything that you could possibly touch, tamei. Then it is tamei. Vet she'ef shar liga, tahor. Whatever you cannot touch is tahor. And that's based on the pasuk in Shmini that says, Chiyamut min ha-beima, she'i lachem lo'ochla, anugeya ben nivlata, itma ad ha'arev. So in all those cases, you have nigiya, you have a focus on here, nivlata, there, nivlatam, and then you also have the conclusion, which is yitma ad ha'arev. So in all those cases, when it deals with the nivela, the nugeya ben nivela says you have to come into direct contact with the nivela. The yitma is a reboy that says that it doesn't have to be really or literally direct contact. It just has to be the possibility of contact. That's enough. Once you have the possibility of contact, then the bone, which is a shomer over the basar that's in there, all of a sudden now you've activated the shomer. When it's completely contained inside the bone, even though the shomer is there, the shomer doesn't take on a din of tuma because you can't have nogeya. Since you can't get access to it, you can't touch it, then the tuma, Nivela in that case does not convey tuma through the shomer or in any manner. That's why the shomer is irrelevant in the case where it's completely sealed. Once you break that seal somehow with a hair's breadth of a hole, then you already have the capacity to touch it. Once you have the capacity to touch it, then the shomer is activated because now tumat maga is relevant. And if the shomer is there, we learned already that a shomer can convey tuma or it can bring tuma. So over here, the tumat nivela that's inside, the bone itself, as a shomer, can convey that tumah outwards. If you touch that bone, then you're going to be tameh, even though you never came into direct contact with the nevela. The Tosfot over here discusses, since the word nevela excludes bones, then by default, all bones are excluded, even bones that are acting as a shomer. The only bone that is included is the one where there is nigiyah. And that's what the Gemara is saying over here, that since once there's a hole that activates the tuma over here, then the bone with the hole in it is the only one that has tuma. The other bones are excluded, even though they act or function as a shomer. That's for the nevela aspect of it. The sheretz aspect, which has the same din, we're going to see after the next Mishnah, where the Gemara will ask for the source for that as well. All right, Amalei Rabbi Zera Abaye, Elemiato, Beima Be'ora, an animal in its hide, Lo titameh, it shouldn't have tuma, because you have now a shomer around it, and you don't have access to the basar, so the skin as a shomer doesn't activate unless you have access to the tuma, unless you have negiyah. Rabbi says back to him, Poke chazi kamin nikavim yeshba. Wait a minute, go look at how many holes there are in the hide of the animal. You have many points of access to the animal. The animal's hide is not a sealed item like a bone around the marrow. It has openings, it has holes in it. If that's the case, that's the access points to the basar. And therefore, since there's tumat maga, then there's also a shomer over here, and the shomer will convey the tuma that is inside of it. Amarle Rav Papa l'rova, elemeata kulya b'chelba lo titama, a kidney that is surrounded by the fats around it. And we already learned earlier in the Masechta that chelev does not have a din of nevela. So the fats that are around the kidney seal the kidney in. So the kidney, which would have tumat nevela, which is an edible part of the basar of the animal, but the chelev that's surrounding it now seals it in place, doti tamei, it should not become tamei. Again, Rova responds to him, similar to the way that Abaye responded to Rabbi Zera, tochazi kama chutim nimshachim emeno. Go see how many fibers come out of it, meaning that there are little pipings that go through the chelev that are made out of basar that touch the kidney on the inside. It's not just fat around there, a complete seal like a bone, but rather there's fat that has basar, lines of basar that run through the fat to reach the kidneys on the inside. And those little hairbreadth fibers that go from the outside of the chelem to the inside, if you touched on the outside, you'd be in contact with the kidney. And therefore, there is tumat maga. There is tumat maga. Then the chelem around it as a shomer will function like a shomer to convey the tumah. And that's why there will be tumah even for a kidney that is surrounded by those fats. By Rav Hoshaya. Chishev alel nukva v'lo nikva. If he thought about puncturing it, and he didn't puncture it, mahu, what is the din? Mechuser nikiva ke mechuser masadami. The fact that it wasn't punctured is a deficit in action, and that deficit in action makes it that it's not punctured. Oh, lo, or maybe not, meaning that the intent to puncture it is sufficient to deem it as if it is punctured. Hadar pashto, afterwards he came to the conclusion, mechuser nikiva, lav ke mechuser masadami. The fact that you didn't act on it is not enough to say that it's not punctured. If you intend to puncture it, it's as if it is punctured, based on this year's in the Gemara, because we don't consider it as being a mechuser masa. Since it's something that you intended to do, and something that will eventually happen if you want to get to the marrow, then we deem it as if it's done once you intend to do it. So that's enough. According to this, intent would be enough. You don't even have to actually puncture it. By Tumah and Tahara, there's a principle that's brought in the Mishnah by regards to Tumah and Tahara, that Machshava can change something into the world of Tumah. A Maisa can reverse that or take it out. That means in order to take something from being Tameh, or having the capacity to accept Tumah and make it Tahor, or prevent it from becoming Tumah, need an action. Thought is not enough. But to take something into the world of Tumah, thought is enough. So if you intend to use an item for a particular purpose, and that makes it that it's already a gemar malocha for this item. For instance, you have leather, and you can make it into a shoe. If you intend to make it into a shoe, the leather as it stands now is not a kli, and it's not at its final stage, it won't be mekabel tumah. If you think about using it for a throw, which would make it that the leather now is already at its end point, it could be mekabel tumah. If you have that thought to use it as a throw, that's enough to allow this item to become tameh, even though you took no action on it. On the other hand, if you already intended for it to be a throw, and then you want to change it into a shoe, you can't stop it from coming to me until you start cutting the throw to start the process of making the shoe. So the ability to bring something into the world of Tumah through Machshava is something that we find. And that's what he's suggesting over here. Your intent to puncture the hole on it would bring it into the world of Tumah, allow there to be a Nigiyah. Yes, you have to do it, but your intent might be enough to consider it as if it already is done. If that's the case, then the bone becomes a Shomer, and it can convey the Tumah, even though you're not touching the Tumah. Now, that's the gears that we have in our Gemara, but if you look at note hey of the sheet that Mekubetzet, he says, Hadar Pashto, the gears was that he came to the conclusion, Mechuser Nikiva, Ke Mechuser Maisedami. Just the exact opposite of what we have. That lacking the action of puncturing it is a Mechuser Maised. That deficit makes it that it's as if it's not punctured. That's the way it's found in the Tosfot Rid or the Piskei Arid. Ubiktzat Svarim, Yishanim, in older Svarim, Lo Nimtza Hadar Pashta Klau. That statement at the end wasn't even there at all. Bikach Haita Girsato Shal Rambam. That was the Girs of the Rambam. Vatosvot Garsinan, Girsat the Rabbi Shai Mimatrani. And the Girsa of the Tosfot, based on the Tosfot in Baba Kama, similar to the Girsa of the Rid that we just brought over here. Therefore, he says, either this line of Hadar Pashto shouldn't be in the Gemara at all, which means, seems likely, which is, the Gemara has no information, or didn't show anything why he changed his mind. He had a question, and he says, oh, then he answered it. What precipitated the answer that he gave afterwards? So the Hadar Pashto seems a little strange that it's there. Rather, the Hadar Pashto seems to be a later addition to the Gemara saying which way they went with regards to this Safek. If you have nothing there, then it becomes a Safek and you go Safek to Chumrah. If you say that there is something written there, then you would have to determine whether it's the saying that it's not Mechuser Maisa or it is Mechuser Maisa. And the Shini Mekubetzin says that he thinks the Girsa, based on the Baal Tosafot, Rabbi Shai Meir Tirani, and also the older Kitfeya that he found, that it should be that it is considered Mechuser Maisa, and therefore it's not considered punctured, although you can understand why the Gemara would have the opposite here, which is the Chumrah. If you say that it goes the Chumrah, then in essence what you're saying is that we look at it as if it is punctured, and maybe that's what precipitated the Hadar Pashto over here. If there was never a thing here, Then in the end, we do go the Chumrah, and that might have been what's added in. But it's interesting because you get opposite conclusions based on whatever girsa that you have over here, and neither of the two are explained. Meaning neither of the two conclusions are explained as to why, after having the question, he was able to answer the question or what precipitated his change in mind. All right, the next Mishnah, Beitzat HaSheretz, when you're dealing with an egg from a Sheretz, one of the eight Shratzim that is found in the Torah, not all of them lay eggs, but the Tzav and the Lita'a, the turtle and the lizard, do lay eggs, HaMirukemet, that is already forming an embryo. I mean, it's not just a quote-unquote raw egg, it's an egg that's already been fertilized, and now has become an embryo inside of it. Tehora, you handle that egg, it's Tehora. Similar to what we just said before by the Nevela and the bone that has the marrow inside of it, the egg is completely sealed. Since it's completely sealed, you have no access to the sherets inside. And that means that when you touch the egg, you carry the egg, there is no tuma. Nikva, kolshu, if there is any hole in the egg, tameh, then you are tameh. Sounds very similar. It's the exact same thing we saw with the bone. With regards to Nevela, we're saying by the egg of the sherets. Achbar, shechetzio basar, vechetzio adama. If you have an achbar, you can call it a mouse. Half of its body is flesh, and half of its body is earth. Hanogeba basar tameh. Whoever touches the basar part of it is tameh. Badama, the dirt part, or the earth part of it is tohor. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, afanogeba badama, shekenegeda basar tameh. Even if you touch the earth, which is opposite the basar, that earth would be tameh. What's being discussed here in the latter half of the Mishnah, and it becomes very clear from Rashi's explanation over here, is the belief in spontaneous generation, which is that there are some animals that don't reproduce by mating or being fertilized. Rather, they reproduce simply by being spontaneously generated, which is a very common belief, until the time that they proved that maggots don't come from meat, because if you covered the meat, then there were never any maggots over there. Rashi describes exactly that feature. He says, Yesh min achbar, shenu prey urveh. There are certain achbarim that do not reproduce. Ela me atzmo notzar mi an adama. It is spontaneously generated out of the ground. An example, ke ashpa hamashrech tolaim. When you go to the garbage dump or your garbage heap, it produces worms. So that's exactly the case of the meat and the maggots. And Rashi is definitely speaking about spontaneous generation. There are those that want to answer that we're really not speaking about spontaneous generation over here. Rather, we're speaking about animals where their reproduction is not visible. That comes up with regards to lice as well, where the Gemara in Shabbat says they're not prey or vey, that they do not reproduce, but rather they are, quote-unquote, spontaneously generated, and that has a halachic ramification. We know today that lice do reproduce. They lay eggs, and that's how they reproduce. Does that mean that you just say the halacha with regards to all the dinim of Shabbat and other items are just incorrect? Or do you say that, and this is what many people try to answer on behalf of the Gemara, is that, yes, lice do reproduce, but they reproduce on a microscopic level. And therefore, that reproduction is not meaningful halachically. And you could argue the same thing over here, except for the fact that Rashi clearly explains it as being spontaneous generation. Not inside of Rashi can you explain it that way, but you possibly could explain the Mishnah or the Gemara in that manner. That's just as an aside. Rashi here is very clear on the Mishnah, and Rashi at the top of the next Amud, we'll see again, says the exact same thing, that these things are spontaneously generated. By the Shratzim, it says, Zeh lachem atamei basheretz v'sheretz al haaretz. Then it lists them all out. And the next pasuk is, Eile atameim lachem v'kol hasheretz konogeh behem mutam itmad haaret. So Eile atameim, the tameim comes to teach you, l'rabot beitzat sheretz, v'kulit hasheretz. That comes to include an egg of a sheretz, and a kulit, and the bone of a sheretz. The Rashi here mentions that in Hatmeim, the extra hay is the drasha, and we learned a number of things from the hay, the sort siran verotvan, they glow the tzir and the rotev of the shratzim we saw earlier, which we also saw earlier, that their skin or hide is considered like their basar, and now for the third limud, which is beitzad asheretz. So Hatmeim has a number of drashot that come from it, including the drasha that we just had here. That extra hay tells you that a beitzad asheretz is a din like a sheretz, like many other items that are mentioned here. Siran, rotvan, oran, kibsaran. All of those have a din like sheretz from the riboy of ha-tmeim. Yochol afilo lo rikma. You would think that's true even as yet to develop into a sheretz. Tamalomar ha sheretz. Ma sheretz. Shiri came. Just like a sheretz. When you're talking about a sheretz, it has to be formed. Afetzad the sheretz. Shirikma. So too, by the egg of a sheretz, it has to be formed. Yochol afilo lo nikvu. You would think even if they don't have any hole in them. Talmud lomar hanogeya yitma, which is the end of the pasuk. So there again, like the pasuk that we brought by Nevela, there etchef sharliga tamei. Whatever you can touch is tamei. Etchef sharliga, whatever you can't touch is tor. Bekama nikivata. How big a hole do you need in order to be that it's deemed to be touchable? Kechut hasara, like the hair's breadth. Shef sharliga kechut hasara. Because you're able then to touch it with a chutasara, as Rashi explains over here, both the tuma from the inside, if it has a hair that's sticking out through the wall of the egg, you touch the hair, then you're in contact with the sheretz that's on the inside. Or vice versa. The person on the outside, if they have a hair on their body, and it goes into the hole of that egg that can allow a hair through it, that hair of the person on the outside can touch the sheretz on the inside. So the allowance for a hair to move through whatever seal is here, here it's an eggshell, before you're talking about a bone, then that hair's breadth of a hole allows nigiya, because you can touch it. Your hair can touch the sheretz on the inside, or the sheretz's hair on the inside can stick out and you can touch it. That allows for contact. That potential is enough to make it that there is possibility of tumat nigiya over here. So that is the minimum amount that allows for contact. That contact that makes it accessible in terms of tumat nigiya. Once that happens, the egg around it becomes a shomer, and a shomer can convey tuma. So then when you touch the egg, you're tameh, even though you never touched the sheretz itself. If it's completely sealed, since there's no accessibility to the sheretz at all, there's no tumat magah, meaning there's no shomer over here, doesn't get the status of a shomer, and therefore if you carry the egg when it's sealed, you're not going to be tameh. Achbar shechetzio. Now the Gemara discusses this spontaneously generated achbar. Amar Rav Yehoshua ben Levi. V'hu sheitz shritz al pnei kulo. That's only true if it is completely a sheretz. So Rashi says, when you say half of it is a living being, and the other half is in the ground, or still part of the ground, which half are you speaking about? You would have naturally thought half means that, like say, the head is coming out, and the rear of the animal is still in the dirt or the earth, and that's what's being generated. That's not true. Rashi says, chetziol pnei orko. The half is means across the entire length of the animal. Shotzeretz mi roshove ad raglav. From its head to its feet. Klomar, shemitzad echad unaseb basar. Ulochi tamei im nagav basar techashiv sheretzu. The first way that we're reading it is it's on the resha, and therefore it means that when you touch the half of the sheretz that you are tamei, it's only when the full length of the sheretz, which is half of the sheretz, is created. When you touch that sheretz, you are tamei. Some say it on the latter part of the Mishnah. Rav Yehuda Omer, af nogeh ba'damash, keneged ha'basar, tamei. I'm Rav Yehoshua ben Levi, v'hu shitzritz al pnei kulo. That's what Rav Yehoshua ben Levi qualifies and says, that's only along the length if it was already created. So what Rav Yehuda says in the Mishnah is, even when you touch the earth that is below the sheretz that's being spontaneously generated, it's tamei, because it's going to turn into a sheretz in a minute. It's going to be converted or spontaneously generated into this sheretz. Now that's only true, not when you have half a body exiting and the other rear of the body's inside, but rather it's when you have the entire length of the body that's there, just the lower half of it is missing. So the entire sheretz exists, it's just missing the bottom half. That's where you, if you touch the earth, you're going to be tamei. But that you need al pnei orko, across the entire length of the sheretz that exists. There you have an entire sheretz, you're just missing the lower half, like the feet are missing from it. It's going to grow in size, like as if it's going to come out of the ground that way. So that's when, if you touch the earth, it would be tamei. The one who says it about the resha certainly says it about the seifa. If you believe in when you touch the sheretz itself, it needs to be the whole length of the sheretz to be tamei, then certainly, according to Rabbi Yehuda, where you're just touching the earth to be tamei, it has to be the full length of the sheretz. The one who qualifies it and says it's about Rabbi Yehuda's statement of a resha, afagav delo hishritz. In the resha, that doesn't have to be the case. It's only when you're deeming the other half to be a sheretz, then you need it to be the whole length of the animal. But in the case where you're touching the sheretz itself, any amount of the sheretz would be sufficient. All right, Tan Rabbanan. Tosh Nemar Achbar, one of the animals listed as being one of the Shmona Shvatzim, the Choled Achbar, Hatzav, Leminehu, Anakav, Akoch, Letav, Achomet, Etin Shomet. So Achbar is one of them. So the Pasuk says Achbar. Shomeani, Afilu Achbar, Shabiyam, Shishmo Achbar. Maybe even the Achbar, not the land Achbar, but the sea Achbar, which is an animal that looks like an Achbar that's in the sea. The Gemara has this principle that anything that's found on the land is also found in the sea. It has a similar form in the sea. So there's an Achbar Shabaretz, there's also an Achbar Shabayam. What exactly that species is, I don't know. Bedinu, it should be. Timei b'chulda, b'timei b'achbar. By the chulda, it's one of the Shmona Shratzim that's mentioned, just like the Achbar. I'm going to continue to use the word chulda. You should know it's a Machloket Rishonim as to what a chulda is. The translation is maybe a rat, maybe a weasel, and there are other translations that are given, something along those lines. Ma chulda min hagadel al aretz, just like by the chulda, it's the chulda on the land, af achbar min hagadel al aretz. So too, the achbar should be the one on the land. The reason the Gemara is saying this is because by chulda, it's the exception. By chulda, it's only found on the land. There's no matching item in the sea that is the chulda of the yam. So by chulda, by definition, it has to be al aretz. So since chulda and achbar are mentioned together in the psukim, just like chulda is the chulda al aretz, so too the achbar should be the achbar al aretz. Oklach v'derch zo. Or maybe learn it this way. Timei b'chulda v'timei b'achbar. The chulda is tamei, and the achbar is tamei. Ma chulda kol shishma chulda by the chulda. Anything that's called a chulda is tamei. Just happens to be there are only chuldot on the aretz, but every chulda is tamei. Af achbar kol shishmo achbar. So maybe then by achbar we'll say the same thing. Anything that's called an achbar will also be tamei afilu achbar shabiyam, because shishma achbar. Also the achbar in the yam, because it's called an achbar, should also be tamei. So which way do we go? Tamulomar. So we solve the problem because it says al aretz. Zelachem atamei b'sheretz hashoretz al haaretz. So it's only things on the land. I al aretz. If it's on the land, yachol al aretz itma, yared layam lo itma. So maybe you would say only when the sheretz is found on land, the ones, the land shvatzim, when they're found on land, they are tamei. You find them in the water, then they're not tamei. So you have a lizard, you have a turtle, they go into the water, maybe they won't be tamei anymore. Tamalomar ha shoretz, that which crawls or moves. Ze tamei lachem b'sheretz ha shoretz al aretz. That shoretz is an extraneous word. You just could have said ze lachem atamei b'sheretz al aretz. Why is it ha shoretz? That comes to teach you kol makom shoretz, wherever it crawls, wherever it moves, that's where it is tamei. That means whether it's on land or whether it's in the water. Oeinu ela, maybe you should learn it this way. Hashoretz, kol hamashritz, yitma. Anything that reproduces is tamei. Shein mashritz, lo yitma. Something that doesn't reproduce is not tamei. The word mashritz can have two meanings. Mashritz is used both to mean to creepy, crawly things, things that move, crawl along the land. Mashritz is also used to mean things that reproduce at a high rate. The reason is probably because they're correlated. Those things that crawl on the ground have a high reproduction rate. Therefore, it became synonymous. Mashritz came to mean giving birth, and that's what the Chazal say in the Agadata in the beginning of Sefer Shmot. Says there, Ubnei So Paru, Vayishritzu, Vayirbu, Yatsmu, Mamod, Mod, Vaytamei, Aretzudam. Vayishritzu, there, the Chazal say, they were having six tuplets. That's exactly what's being described over here. The sheretz gives birth to multiple offspring at a single time. And so that's why the sheretz is also synonymous with mashritz, to reproduce. So now, how do you know, when you use the extraneous word shoretz, how do you know that means something that's crawling on the ground? Or maybe it means only things that reproduce. If that's the case, I would exclude this spontaneously generated item because it's not she'enu prey or revei, because it does not reproduce. And as Rashi says over here very clearly, it's created on its own, it is spontaneously generated. Again, Rashi is clearly saying spontaneous generation. If you give the other answers that it's not visible reproduction, you could say in the Gemara, it's still difficult even to say in the Gemara, but that is still plausible. And Rashi's explanation is clear that he's viewing this as spontaneous generation. So then, v'dinu, timei b'chuda, v'timei b'achbar. You made it tamei by a chuda, made it tamei by achbar. Ma chuda, kosher shma chuda. Just by the chuda, everything that's a chuda. Af achbar, kosher shma achbar. Then everything that's called an achbar. Therefore, avi achbar shechetzio basar vechetzio adama. And therefore, I should include anything that is called an achbar, including this spontaneously generated achbar. Uklach ha-derbzo. Maybe we should do it this way. Ma chuda frey urvei. Just like the chuda reproduces. Achbar frey urvei. So to an achbar that reproduces. Tamalomar basheretz. Good, it says, Zelechem atameh basheretz hashoretz ala aretz. And then it seems like the word basheretz would be necessary. We already said hashoretz was extraneous and ala aretz is extraneous. But truthfully, if you continue in the psukim and it says, Eile atmeim lechem b'chol hasharetz, then again, hasharetz is mentioned afterwards. You don't need basheretz in the first pasuk. And therefore, all three of these terms in this pasuk are extraneous. Zelechem atameh basheretz, hashoretz, ala aretz. And therefore, each one of them we're going to use for a drasha. So that extra word of basheretz comes to include even something that's chetzio ba'aretz. Chetzio is a chai. In a spontaneous generated sheretz will be included in tuma. And therefore, by definition, hashoretz then does not come to speak about reproduction, but rather the fact that wherever it lives, it is considered to be a sheretz. That means whether it's on the land or in the water, as long as it is al ha'aretz, which was defined it that it has to be a land sheretz. So the three different limudim teach us, first of all, al ha'aretz, it has to be a sheretz ha'aretz. The fact that it is sheretz tells you that no matter where it is, once it's a land sheretz, even if it's in the water, it's still tameh. And the last tasharetz comes to teach you that even if it doesn't reproduce, it still has a din of sheretz. Okay, we're going to stop here. 9 lines down on the top of Kuf Chav Zayin, Amud Aleph.